Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM, Talkspace.com/boom, B-O-O-M.
It opens wide to Wade. What a dunk! Fournier blocked his dunk! Here's Wade against Green. Eurostep. Basket. Alex out.
Welcome to the Heat Check. I'm Wes Goldberg. With me, as always, it's David Ramil. How you doing, David?
I am doing phenomenal. This is a great off season for us to kind of regroup and get ready for the long off season grind.
We're doing a special NFL draft edition of the Heat Check. It has nothing to do with the NFL draft at all. We're just happen to be recording the same day as the first round, so it's special. What did you say?
Does that mean no one's going to be listening to this, or they have plenty of opportunity after they realize that the Dolphins don't pick anybody of significance in the first round?
They could probably listen to this entire podcast in between the first and second pick with the amount of time it takes.
That's right. Just
listen to between picks and then just pause it really quick when Roger Goodell comes up and you can boom him and then he announces some random person and then goes back and we'll have no idea if that person's good for like 3 years. But we're going to do some superlatives.
That's right.
It's a superlative themed podcast.
Well, it's the end of the school year. Everybody's getting their yearbooks, you know, most popular, mm-hmm. best looking couple, best smile, most talented. And so we wanted to apply that to the Miami Heat, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. So most likely to succeed would probably be the Heat organization in general, because I feel really good about this team next year. I think this team is going to take a big leap. I think everybody kind of had that same feeling with this rocky season. It was kind of let's get through this and look forward to next year. So I think everybody's kind of feeling good. And now with likely a top 10 pick, we have some things to talk about.
Absolutely. Although, I mean, I've read that it's a top 10. It's either 10 or 1, 2, or 3, right? It's not
right
in between that. Okay, so that's
right.
Exactly where we'd fall in the draft.
But. And they have like a 4% chance of getting a top 3 pick. And, you know, so what I'm saying is that there's a chance, but...
There's always a chance, but yeah, I mean, it's interesting, though, because then, I mean, I know we don't want to get too deep into the draft, and, you know, not until we know exactly what happens, but if they did wind up getting a top 1 or 2 pick, I'm not sure if any of the players that are expected to be taken at that stage in the draft would be somebody that Miami's looking to add to their team, so maybe you start opening up the possibility of entertaining trade speculation.
Haven't we talked about this? Like, if the Heat end up lucking into a top 3 pick, that they would probably be better off trading that pick for, like, DeMarcus Cousins or, like, that kind of thing? Like, I mean, the first pick overall last year got traded for Kevin Love. I mean, you can, you know, with an assortment of other things, but... Mainly, Andrew Wiggins went straight up for Kevin Love, and this is a deep draft with and Jahlil Okafor and Karl Towns. They project as better pros from what I'm reading than Andrew Wiggins did, you know, at least from the get-go, right? So, and it's a neat position for a lot of teams. So I don't know. It's interesting. It'd be wild if they actually got that pick.
Yeah.
Or they could just take Justice Winslow out of Duke, which would fill a major need.
Is he worth that high a pick, though?
I've seen him in, like, 3 or 4, so I wouldn't mind a reach. I mean, if they ended with the first or second pick, I think you kind of have to take either Okafor or Towns, right? And then just take the player and then trade them later or just see what happens. But because, you know, Whiteside's not a done deal, right? We don't know. And we'll get to more Whiteside stuff later probably. But if they had, like, the third pick and those two centers were off the board, Winslow would probably be D'Angelo Russell out of Ohio State. You know, those guys would actually be good for this team. So, like, at that point, you can kind of – like, those guys fill needs.
Yeah. And so. I know that a lot of people think that Miami will take a wing player, but I actually think they kind of would be better off Chris and Chris Anderson nearing the end of their careers, and the Robert situation being somewhat tenuous in that you don't know what exactly you're going to get out of him, and especially with Hassan Whiteside's free agency looming large over the franchise, I mean, I think it actually might be a good idea to take somebody, even if you just wind up with a 10th pick and you can get somebody like the kid out of Texas, I forget his name.
Miles Turner?
Yeah, exactly.
I keep wanting to call him Miles Teller from the actor, yes. But it's not him.
Or Willie Cauley Stein, did I get mm-hmm. that right?
Yeah, if they took Willie Cauley Stein, I'd be ecstatic because that guy is a beast. But
you think he's a real deal?
Yeah, he's just like... So if they take a front court player, like, it's not a major need because you have Bosch and Whiteside, right? But that would remind me of, like, an NFL team, speaking of the draft, taking, like, just getting one extra, like, how the Giants just always take defensive linemen, or you have teams that'll just always take, like, offensive linemen just to kind of make sure that they have something there, you know? Because you never know when one guy is just going to go down. It's a good area to have depth. There's a lot of rotation going on. If they took a Turner or Frank Kaminsky or... you know, another front court guy that they can just kind of slide in as a backup in the power rotation, I think that would be very valuable for the team. But, you know, I do think that having a wing player, you know, just knowing Pat Riley and that he kind of favors wing players and he wants to get as many of them, and him and Spoelstra want to get as many of them on the court as a time as they can, I think that's where they probably go. I know what you're saying is that you think that they should, you know, you kind of like that mock draft, what they should do or what you think they will do. And you're kind of saying that you think they should take one, but you probably also think that they will probably take a perimeter player, right? Hello?
Oh, I'm sorry. What happened there?
Do you think they'll take a perimeter player, or do you think they'll take, like, you're saying they should take a front court player, but what do you think they will do if they stay at 10?
I think they'll wind up taking the wing player, but I think that they should take a front court player, because I think it just behooves them to have somebody that they can bring in there and kind of learn the ropes a little bit. Because it's just, we saw with Whiteside that talent kind of translates across the board there, but at the same time, there's also a finesse approach that needs to be applied there, especially when you're talking about these big men. I mean, you've got a lot of these guys that have the size, and maybe they'll have some raw skill there, but it needs to really be harnessed. And then you can get a guy like, you know, Udonis Haslam, and I know we've referred to it on a number of occasions, but, you know, just that experience that he has is guarding so many more larger players throughout his whole career. He's been so effective at it, and he's never had the talent, but he's always had that work ethic and always been driven. And then you get a guy like Anderson there who's clearly towards the end of his career as well, and he can really get a player to maximize their athleticism, work on their timing when it comes to shot blocking and rim protection. And it wouldn't hurt to go up against on a daily basis a guy like Whiteside either, who clearly is a front court player mm-hmm. of the future. So I think it's just something that, whether it's the NFL model or not, I'm not quite sure, but at the same time, to me, it just seems to make sense that with this position kind of opening up over the next few years, yeah, Chris Bosh is in place, McRoberts maybe, who knows about him, and Whiteside, you don't know what's going to happen. Let's say he leaves in 2016, do you be caught with your figurative pants down and not have somebody who can step in at the center position mm-hmm. after you've already gone to a much more traditional lineup, you know, which we expect to happen next year, you know?
Mm.
I'd rather see them be prepared for that. Maybe they expect that they can re-sign Whiteside, no problem, but from everything I've read, it seems to be a concern, and I know that they're going to continue working with him and everything else, but, you know, he looks to take a leap next year, so I think he's going to be harder to sign than a lot of people expect. And I think a lot of people are taking at face value that, you know, this is the franchise that gave him an opportunity and they were smart enough to sign into a 2-year deal. That works fine, but in the long term, he hasn't made a whole heck of a lot of money. He's going to want to cash in, and I'm not sure if Miami, who's going to commit a lot of money to Bosch, a lot of money to Dragic, if they're going to be able to commit that same kind of, you know, huge contract to a guy like Whiteside. So
well, when he comes off, when he comes off the books, that the cap takes a leap. So I think they'll have the room, but because under this new cap, even under the current cap, you should be able to fit about 3 max players, even though they're going to have like some money tied up and they're not going to have money tied up when Whiteside comes off the books. That's kind of the point. But my thing is with this player development program, which we haven't talked about on the podcast, this is, yeah, I think it's kind of like a ruse. Like it's just kind of, this is obviously an attempt for the organization to keep Whiteside close to the team, right? Like, this isn't so much making sure that he's working on his post-up skills or his passing skills. This is really just to make sure that he's not getting in trouble or, you know, losing sight of things, and that he's staying committed, basically, this whole player-specific development program that Spoelstra was talking about during the exit interviews.
You really think that? I mean,
100%.
Really?
It's a complete theory on mine. I have no sources. I have nobody telling me about this, but that is 100%. Because a player can, you know what I mean? Like, he's good right now the way he is. He's a max-type player today, like right now. So this idea of needing to put him through this development program, all these guys are going to kind of get coached up. He's still eligible for the summer league, as far as I know. There's going to be plenty of opportunity for him to work on those skills. This is, I think, 100% the organization saying, we need to keep you close to home so that you don't end up on your couch eating McDonald's cheeseburgers or something, or not working on your game or getting into trouble or something, you know?
I never considered that.
So I wonder if this almost micromanaging and this babysitting could get to Whiteside, and then that forces him to leave. Like, thanks for giving me a chance, but I've outgrown you, and it's almost like the 18-year-old leaving home at that point.
I mean, we've certainly talked about that before, and you know, there have been enough kind of warning signs about his personality that you're not quite sure what you're going to get. But, I mean, the talk seems to be a lot about, and maybe that's just a comfortable narrative, but a lot of people seem to be talking about, you know, Juwan Howard and Alonzo Mourning specifically taking a much more active mentoring role with him.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe they'll be able to instill in him that kind of maturity and dedication and you know, the kind of mentality that the Heat culture values so much.
I've never been a believer in that. This guy, he's 25 years old. This is like a whole, like, after you go overseas and play overseas and do all that stuff, and he's obviously he's increased his work ethic to some extent now that he's in the league and he's sticking and it's paying off right now. But I think this is what you're going to get from Whiteside. I don't think at 25 years old at this point, after he's already kind of done all the adversity stuff, this is what you get. I don't care how much Alonzo Mourning and Juwan Howard talk to him and coach him up. I think, like, this is just what it is.
As far as his personality is concerned.
Yeah, I don't think at this point you're going to instill more maturity or something. Like, you can get, like, basketball maturity after he learns how to play in the playoffs and stuff like that. But as far as just, like, a personality standpoint, I think this is what you have. I think this is Whiteside. This is just who he is.
Well, I mean, yes, I agree with you somewhat. But at the same time, it's just, you know, he's not very worldly despite those experiences overseas. Right. And certainly he doesn't know how to apply that to life in the league. And I hear that, I mean, from what I've heard over the history of the league and my following it, that seems to be the hardest part for a lot of players to adjust to. The sudden recognition, the sudden fame, traveling, life on the road, all these kinds of things really play a factor. Maybe he's, you know, this is his first real season in the NBA. I mean, I know he's played a number of games with Sacramento, et cetera, but, I mean, he's never really had to go through it until this season before. And now that he's going to be a focal point moving forward, there's going to be another adjustment period that's going to be necessary for him. So I'd like to see a mentoring role there. Whether or not it sticks, I guess, to your point, maybe it might not, because he's done developing, at least between the years. But you hope that's not the case, because I think, you know, again, as you and I have talked about, we've seen some things from him that we'd like for him to avoid altogether moving forward, and hopefully, you know, it doesn't become a sticking point when there's negotiations involved and things of that sort. So.
Well, he doesn't necessarily need to be smart enough to make the right decisions. He just needs to be smart enough to listen to the guys that are going to make the right decisions for him. You know what I mean? If he's just smart enough to listen to Alonzo Mourning and Juwan and Pat Riley and all those guys, if he's just smart enough to do that, and he doesn't go off and try to be really stubborn and maybe smarter than he is, he'll be fine.
But it's like a fine line there, because you hear Pat Riley in his exit, you know, end of season press conference, and he's saying, you know, like, Alonzo, he wants him to develop that kind of attitude where he's demanding the ball every fourth or fifth trip down court. And to me, that's aggressive and everything else, but that's also kind of being an asshole. Like, I mean, I understand that you kind of have to demand the ball, but at the same time, you know, he's going to piss off some people. And now you're looking at the protected starting lineup for next season, and I was just thinking about this earlier today. You know, you got, if Dre Dragic resigns. You've got Wade, who's still a contributor even at his age. You got Luol Deng if he opts in. You got Chris Bosh, who's going to be looking for touches, and all of a sudden he's not going to be anywhere near the paint with Whiteside clogging it. And then Whiteside is expected to demand the ball every fourth or fifth play. I mean, I don't see how it works.
Do you think that was more of a public statement saying, because what does Whiteside want, right? Like, think about last year's exit interviews. Pat Riley said all of the things LeBron didn't want to hear, right? That's kind of the consensus.
Oh, yeah.
But maybe in this interview, maybe Riley sort of learned a lesson, and even though it sounds like he's kind of doing the same exact thing, he's doing it somewhat differently. Like, if you think about what Whiteside has always wanted, he wants the ball, he wants the touches, he wants just the opportunity to prove himself. I mean, there's that great feature on the NBA D-League website about just how all he ever wanted was a chance, and I would sit on the bench and say, I could do that, I could be better than that guy. And that's what the Heat gave him. And if Riley's basically saying, like, what he's saying and saying, like, I want him to demand the ball, is you're going to be the centerpiece of this team. Like, you are our long-term guy. So, like, start acting like it, and you have, or more, maybe more accurately, you have the right to act like that. Like, go ahead. So, I don't know, like, I don't know if it's good or bad, but that's at least what I'm taking away from it.
It's an interesting perspective, one I hadn't considered before, and I mean, there's a lot that could go really well with it, and a lot that could go really badly. It could, you know, I actually wrote about how, you know, he might have gone a little too far in his criticism of Wade, and telling him he kind of needs to suck it up with his injuries, etc. I mean, I know he didn't quite use that verbiage, but I mean, he might have gone a little too far, and certainly, like you pointed out, in lieu of what he said last year about LeBron James, you know, Riley gets a pass because he's the godfather and everything else he's done as far as changing, you know, Heat culture, but at the same time, he may be a little out of touch of exactly how to speak to these players. And, you know, he's always prided himself on pushing the right buttons. But clearly that didn't work last season with LeBron, so maybe he needs to take a step back there. I mean,
maybe you should read that book Brian Shaw was reading about millennials. Nail that.
That worked out so well for him.
Yeah, Brian Shaw's got a gig as a part-time analyst on NBA Network. That's pretty cushy.
That's right. Is he using plenty of hashtags and emojis?
Sunglass emoji 100.
That's
all you need to know. All right. Well, why don't we get to these superlatives? You ready?
That's right. Yeah.
All right. The first one. It's exciting. I hope you're ready for this.
I think I might be.
Okay. Most likely to get traded. I'll let you go first.
Most likely to get traded. I think clearly the odd man out is Josh McRoberts. I think as much as we entertain the possibilities of him playing and opening up the floor a little bit, his contract demands aren't too heavy, but at the same time, a little bit too much for what he's actually been able to provide. I don't know if he's going to be sustainable as far as like his whole skill set is concerned. There was even a piece earlier this week by Ira Winterman where he addressed the question whether or not he might be the odd man out. You know, I think you and I have talked about it, whether or not he might be. And if you want to open up a little space there, let's say the, you know, that ideal best case scenario happens where you wind up getting the second or third pick in the draft. You package it together with a guy like McRoberts and maybe get the wing player of your needs, you know, somebody that you can actually build a team around in the future, et cetera. So to me, McRoberts is that guy because of his contract, because we don't know what we're going to get, because he becomes a little bit more superfluous with the development of Hassan Whiteside, et cetera. I think he's the guy that is on his way up.
Well, I'm going to go with Shabazz Napier.
All right.
I think Napier was obviously drafted to be the point guard of the future, and that didn't pan out.
Clearly.
And the Heat made a move and got Goran Dragic when they pounced on an opportunity. And now with Dragic there and Chalmers as a very capable backup point guard, I don't think anybody would dispute that, right? He's a quality backup point guard.
Yeah.
Napier becomes, to use your word, superfluous, right? There we go.
Yeah. Close enough.
There we go. Superfluous. His contract isn't demanding. It's, you know, I think it's $1.2 million in the second year of that rookie contract. You know, so it's not a headache, but I think it's more so wanting that roster space, especially when you have guys like Tyler Johnson, who can handle the ball probably and run the pick and roll better than Napier can.
Yeah.
surprisingly, because that was kind of Napier's thing when he came into the league, was that he was supposed to be able to run that pick and roll. But I think teams that just kind of crowd him, he can't see over them, and I don't know if he's got the court vision in general, like a Steve Nash or those kind of guys, and even a guy like Isaiah Thomas, who just have a little bit more court vision. I don't think Napier has that, maybe to that extent, or the foresight or the instincts or whatever it might be, however those small guys get around those guys. But he just seems to, once you crowd him, everything stops. You can't even get in the flow of the offense. And that was his problem the entire time. And he's not a great shooter either, so it doesn't help. I think that Napier could get moved in order to clear up a roster spot. They're not going to waive him, so I think that's why he might get traded. Maybe he gets traded in some sort of package, and maybe the Heat take Napier in their second-round pick to move up in the second round, or I don't know, something like that. It wouldn't be a major move. It's not like they're going to trade Napier for a legitimate contributor, probably. But if there's somebody looking for a point guard, like the Heat were able to find New Orleans looking for a backup and they were able to unload Norris Cole, I think it's a situation like that. They might be able to get a veteran player back, a veteran front court guy or something like that. So, or even a veteran point guard who might not need that development and the attention that Napier is going to need. So I think Napier is probably most likely to get traded.
So what do you think of my McRoberts selection?
I think that it's certainly possible. I just think that, and you mentioned that Ira Winderman piece, and that same piece, he kind of mentions that the organization is still intrigued with what they could do with McRoberts. And I think that's going, I don't think they need the cap space right now because his contract is a little long term, but that also means that it might be more difficult to trade him because of his injury issues. So I don't know if they're going to necessarily find the value that they want. That's going to be worth, you know what I mean? Like if they can't find the value in return, If that package deal doesn't emerge, it might just be not worth to trade him away, given that they're still intrigued by his potential and how he fits in on this roster. Because I certainly think a guy of his skill set gives them a lot of flexibility. And if you don't have it, he seems maybe like extra right now. But if you don't have a guy like McRoberts on the court or on the roster, then you're very, very shallow in that front court rotation. So if they don't think that they're going to use their mid-level exception on a front court guy or even a guy to McRoberts' caliber or in his skill set, and he's definitely got a unique skill set, and if they don't think that they're going to take a guy of his position in the draft, then I don't know if they trade him. So I think I think they hold on to him.
Interesting. No, you make a convincing argument, to be honest. I'm sorry to rethink my pick.
Most likely to leave in free agency.
You go for it.
This is Lou Aldang, right? All the way.
Well, I mean, there's one other option, right?
Dragic.
Yeah,
I don't think he's going anywhere.
It doesn't sound it, right?
The Heat can offer that fifth year. It's not like the Lakers just traded him. Like, the Lakers traded him to the team that he wanted to go to.
Right.
You know, they... Again, those exit interviews. I don't know. Is there another team in the league that uses the exit interviews like a psychoanalysis, mind control game that the Heat do? Like, I swear, it's not even about the media. It's just about talking to the players in a public forum. It's kind of strange. So, I mean, they just kept talking about playing fast, playing with the flow offense, like what the Warriors are doing. Like, you don't, like, when Spoelstra literally says, look at what Golden State's doing, and Goran Dragic hears that and sees that Steph Curry's about to win MVP... I mean, if you're a point guard who can shoot the ball and do all the things that a point guard needs to do in this modern NBA and in that flow-type offense, I mean, come on.
Yeah.
So.
But then conversely, he's saying that Whiteside needs to demand the ball more often.
Yeah, but that's fine because Dragic likes to give the ball away. He's a good passer.
But, that kind of free-flowing offense is kind of counter to, you know, a low post-based offense with Whiteside, isn't it?
Well, do you need to have a low post offense to demand the ball all the time? I mean, Whiteside's really good in the pick and roll situation, maybe that's all it needs is, hey, you know, it's been four times since we ran it. It's been four or five times down the court since we ran a pick and roll for me. It's our bread and butter play. Let's do it. I don't know.
I mean, yeah, it's possible.
But I don't think you're wrong to cut up that thing because I think that's, again, just a psychoanalysis of those press conferences. It's wild. It's like a It's like a party. I just love like listening to those exit interviews. Like they actually matter. Most teams, it doesn't matter. It's like whatever. The Orlando Magic, say whatever you want. Nobody cares. But like the Heat, it's like, how are you using this public forum to, you know, lift off into next season or the off season, really?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, I judge it in comparison to the Thunder exit interviews, and, mm-hmm. and that was more like a death knell for Scott Brooks, where mm-hmm. everybody's being asked, well, what do you think of Scott Brooks? And everybody's got to say, oh, I love him. I want him to stay here. And then, you know, a week later, he's got canned. So
yeah.
It's kind of hilarious that, I mean, when you look at Miami's, they're so much more optimistic about the whole thing. It's like, yeah, we recognize that injuries kind of killed this team, but next year is going to be great. It's going to be so much better, so much to look forward to. Goran's going to come back. You know, Chris Bosh is going to come back. He's already talking about going back to the lab and rebuilding his game, et cetera, et cetera. So much more optimism out of the Heat than most teams, given their circumstance that they didn't make the playoffs. I mean, with the exception of maybe Udonis, who was pretty ornery about the whole thing.
Udonis just hates losing. I love Udonis. It's like nothing's happy. It's like he hates having a top 10 pick. He's like, it almost hurts his pride to be in the lottery. It does hurt his pride right. to be in the lottery. It's just like,
yeah.
It's unacceptable. I love you. Gotta love you, D. Anyway, back to Luol Deng, though. We agree, right? Most likely to leave?
I mean, he seems so unhappy on his role in Miami. And
yeah.
That's where he was best utilized. That's the whole thing. Is that he doesn't want to be a standstill shooter. He's more of a slasher, according to him. But by the same token, he was so wildly inconsistent and then so effective from three-point range. It's like, dude, if you're good at it and it helps your team win, you kind of have to do it. And maybe this is why he sort of wore out his welcome.
Why wouldn't you want to shoot the ball? Like, at his age, wouldn't you rather be, like, a jump shooter if you could do it effectively? I don't understand him.
Like,
why would you want to go slash into the middle and get your body all more banged up than it already is after you've been playing, like, 68 minutes a game with Thibs?
There's something really bizarre about the whole thing. It's like,
he's weird.
You like being a slasher, I get it, but at the same time, you shot, like, really well from three-point range. You were very effective most of the season. Why wouldn't you just continue to do that, especially, you know, next year where they're going to have guys who can cut to the hoop and like Dwayne Wade and Goran Dragic. You're going to have Whiteside clogging up the middle there again. You know, it's not going to change next year. So if anybody's going to leave, it's clearly going to be him because he doesn't like his role here and it's not liable to change next season.
I think he opts out, right? And then he really tests free agency. I think that's what happens because – if he can at least get a long-term – he knows he's on the decline. And I don't think the Heat were – if Deng came up to the offices and said, look, I'm opting out, I think the next word out of Pat Riley's mouth is, okay, good luck. And that's it. He's not going to be like, no, I want you on the books for $10 million next year. I think it's going to be like, okay, let's see what we can work out. Let's schedule a meeting and, you know, take a couple of weeks. We'll schedule a meeting and we'll see where we are then.
Would you re-sign Deng given his health history for like 4 years, $20
million? No.
You wouldn't.
Not 4 years. I would give him a one-year deal. I would say, look, if you want to opt out, that's fine. If you want to come back, we'll give you a one-year deal. And we'll even give you $10 million. One-year deal, $10 million. We will overpay you to have you for 1 year because that's his shelf life. I think Deng has one more good year in him, and that's it.
And next year?
Yes, next year.
So why would he opt out if he already is scheduled to make $10 million next year?
In order to get a long-term deal. I think if you kind of give up some money up front now, but you can get – like a 4 year deal at like $20 million a year, what's that equal? That's $5 million a year. If you could get like $7-8 million a year for 4 years or even six.
I don't think he can get that kind of money.
Yeah, I don't think so either. But I think that if he opts out, you know, Deng took a long time last free agency really trying to get the money, you know, as much money as he could. He took a lot of time. And he realized that he wasn't going to get it. So he basically took the same offer that everybody else was giving him, but to play for what was thought of as a contending team with the Heat. But so he's not afraid to sit it out and wait and see what comes to his door, right? Like, and I think that's what happens. I think this whole Deng situation is a long situation. I think this is gonna be a long process.
Well, that's no good. I mean, it certainly doesn't help Miami.
No, certainly not.
Because they're not going to have any other option at the small forward position, unless they find somebody in the draft or get a high draft pick and are able to parlay that into a competent wing player who might be an effective starter. Because we don't anticipate James Ennis making a huge leap.
And they still have the mid-level exception. I think if they can if they can go find somebody, if, you know, Dang leaves, you think Dang is at $10 million a year, right? What's Matt Barnes making? If they can get, like, a Matt Barnes player. Matt Barnes is not good by any respect, but if his value might be better. Let's look it up right here.
I don't want Matt Barnes on the team under any circumstance.
Well, maybe, like, a Matt Barnes type. I mean, he's making $3.4 million next year.
Jared Dudley?
Yeah. Oh, I would love Jared Dudley. He would be a great fit. I don't know if he stays in Milwaukee, but...
No, he's a free agent, isn't he?
Yes, he is. He might want to stay in Milwaukee, but he also might not want to stay in Milwaukee. He's moved around quite a bit the last couple of years, so I don't know if he's...
Why would you want to stay in Milwaukee when you have an option to come into Miami?
That's a good point. That's a very good point.
Didn't he play in Phoenix with Goran Dragic?
Yes. There you go. You're connecting the dots. If they could get Jared Dudley is a better player than Noel Dang, I think.
At this point in his career, yeah.
And especially for what the Heat want to do. And if Dragic has the say that we believe that he does have, maybe he says something like, look, why don't we go get my boy Dudley? He's going to want to come to Miami. He wants to play with me again. He doesn't want to play with Michael Carter-Williams. Like, we could sign him for $3 million a year.
Oh, I think he's going to take a little more than that.
Too. $4 million a year. We'll give him half. We'll give him $5 million a year, half of what Dang's making.
On a four-year deal?
Yeah, I would do it for $5 million a year.
That might be what it takes.
Yeah. Yeah, you kind of have to give him the long-term deal, right? So that's a sound investment, I think. And, yeah, that's interesting. All right.
I don't think anybody's linked Dudley to the team simply because he's still in the playoffs.
You heard it here first.
Yeah, absolutely. We got to take credit where it's due.
Yeah. We'll make sure to put out a public announcement. Who takes the biggest leap next year?
This is a really difficult one.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I had a hard time thinking about it. But to me, it's actually going to be Dragic should he resign.
Goran or Zoran?
Sorry?
Goran or Zoran?
I'm going to go with Goran on this one.
Okay.
Because I think Zoran's not going to be able to take much of a leap when he's stuck to the bench. But anyway, I think Goran is going to really have a good offseason. And if he resigns, and I think we get Chris Bosh back and we get a slightly improved version of Whiteside, should he develop a little bit, et cetera, I think it does nothing but help this guy. And that he's going to be able to make the team more his. He's going to get the contract that he thinks he deserves. He's going to be much more comfortable with that. For the first time ever, he's going to be the man, and I think he's going to really appreciate that. And I think we saw glimpses of it last year where he was trying to fit in, but now that fear of having to fit in is going to be gone, he's really going to take it over. So, I mean, it's hard to say with him because I think we made the same argument when we were looking at the most improved player of the year. You know, how much of a leap can he possibly make considering how good he already is? But he's going to go from really good to really, really good. And for me, that seems like a significant leap because he could go to maybe superstar level in Miami, which is something that a lot of people weren't expecting him to be with such a, you know, stacked roster, et cetera. So I'd like to see him make that leap. What about you?
It's tempting to go with a guy like Ennis or Tyler Johnson or something, but you never know how these guys... Like, these guys, like, they flame out all the time or they become contributors. And, like, Tyler Johnson and James Ennis are not becoming, like, starters, like, probably at any point in their career, like, consistent starters. It would be nice, but I don't know if that's going to... Like, that's not necessarily their projections, right? But, like, a guy like Dragic, I agree with you. I kind of was splitting hairs between Dragic and Whiteside because you want to believe that with a full summer and all this time committed. I mean, Whiteside only played half the season last year for the Heat. It's almost hard to remember that. So there's definitely a case to be made with Whiteside. He showed some post moves. You know, he's got that spin, and he's got the hook shot, and he's got the fadeaway like that he went with a couple times. And it'd be nice to see him put all that together for an entire season. And if you look statistically, like, his stats will probably take a pretty large leap because his stats were kind of deflated because only played half the season. In some of those games he played, he's only playing like 3 minutes a game or something, and that was it. But I agree with you with Dragic because all of the things that you want for a guy to take a leap, that's what's going to happen. He's going to be more comfortable with the team. He's going to have a full summer of work to put in. He's going to be in that new. He's going to have a new contract that he's going to live up to. He's going to want to live up to, right? You know, he's got all these things, and then, like, on a personal level, and then as a team, they're going to rejig the offense so that it fits him.
Right.
So with all those things combined, I think, yeah, he takes a bigger leap, and that leap is very underrated. From good to great is a very underrated leap.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, I will say that Whiteside does have that potential to fill that role as well, and I think you pointed it out brilliantly a few weeks ago, or no, maybe even as far back as a few months ago, and that that next step for him would be to be much more effective as a passer in the low post.
Yes.
If he's able to somehow incorporate that, where he's just not, you're not just dumping it down to him and hoping that he makes a shot out of this or that he does something. More often than not, he would, but he needs to become a much more fluid part of an offense, especially if they do, as you say, rejig it so that it's you know, focuses on Dragic's strong suits, etc. Then all of a sudden, maybe you could make that case for Whiteside taking that huge leap there. But otherwise, I agree that I think Dragic is the man.
Yeah, I think I don't know if that whole passing thing is ever going to happen. It seems like the logical next step, which is why I wrote that piece.
Sure.
And the only reason that's so is because there's such an opportunity there, like an opportunity for growth, because I just wrote about this recently. I kind of revisited the numbers. He's got the second lowest assist ratio in the NBA of all centers.
Huge.
And the last place guy is some guy that plays 5 minutes for the Timberwolves, 5 minutes per game. So Whiteside doesn't pass. That's
right.
Like in if you know it's like a it's a decimal point that he passes. It's like it's a fraction. So he basically just doesn't pass. And we know that. That's the eye test, right? He will literally if there's two guys coming at him, which teams started to double team him as the year went on. He'll just barrel through him and throw up an attempt, and it'll be a bad shot, but he won't ever look to pass it. He's just going to get that shot up, and he still converts almost 65% of his shots. But
right.
So
I mean, considering his high field goal percentage, maybe you can make the argument that he doesn't need to pass that much.
Right, and that's exactly the argument, right? And because his skill set is, you know, the dive man and the pick and roll, you know, he's still developing those post skills. So basically all his points are coming off of pick and rolls and just cleaning the boards. Offensive rebounds and putbacks and things like that. So you don't really pass off a putback, and you rarely pass as the dive man on the pick and roll. You know, there's very few guys in the league that can do that, that have the coordination to even throw an accurate pass while diving on the pick and roll, right? So, you know, it's just the way that he was utilized doesn't really lend itself to passing the ball at all. And we don't even know that he was asked to. So, you know, if the Heat... It's the logical step because of the opportunity that's there to improve. And you assume that those numbers will just improve naturally because they were so low. But at the same time, I don't know that he needs to do that. If he's just a top defender, just a dominating defender in the paint and just a weapon to use on offense as a pick and roll guy and just cleaning up the boards, and if that's his career, that is a solid career. And that's a very valuable thing. I don't know.
I agree.
So, all right, most likely to take the biggest slide next season.
That's all you.
Chris Anderson.
Haha, interesting.
Yeah, I think just if you're looking at it year to year, he very visibly declines every season. I mean, we've talked about it before. He's not the player that first signed in Miami and was that huge asset off the bench who was making backdoor cuts and cleaning the boards and just a rebounding machine and a defensive stalwart. He's just not that anymore, and just because of natural aging. And I just think that lends itself to believe that he's just going to probably play about 10 to 12 minutes a game next year. I mean, he went from playing 20 minutes a game almost, you know, as much as Spoelstra messes with his rotations, we were almost guaranteed 20 minutes from Chris Anderson. You know, 10 minutes in the first half, 10 minutes in the second half.
Yep.
And, you know, it came down to about 15 minutes a game this year. And I just, you know, you look at that and you're maybe like 10, 12 minutes a game next season.
There were still some glimpses from him, though, where he was doing some good things. I think he's tried to adjust for his lack of athleticism. You know, he was never the best athlete. By the time he had joined Miami, he had already deteriorated some, but clearly there was a drop off from last year to this season. So, I mean, it's a good guess. It's a good guess. To me, though, I think the person who's going to decline the most is actually going to be Dwayne Wade.
No, I didn't want you to say that. Podcast over. We're done.
That's too bad. I don't know. I call it a gut feeling. You know, it's not. I'm not Charles Barkley here. And I feel like almost like, you know, the same way everybody does when they talk about the Spurs every season, where this is the season, right? They're going to be done. They can't possibly be good next year. And then they wind up doing it. And maybe that's hopefully what I'm doing with Dwayne Wade. Maybe he comes back and finds a way to, you know, a lot of people are saying, oh, this longer offseason is going to translate into, you know, him playing 70 games next year and producing 20 points per game. But if not even such a drop off in terms of ability, it'll be a drop off in terms of production, because this team is going to be vastly different. You're going to have a guy like Whiteside who can produce and possibly demand the ball if Pat Riley's correct. Chris Bosh is going to be back in the lineup. He's not going to call for the ball, but he's going to be effective. He's going to get his points. He's going to be a productive player there. Whoever they have in the small forward position, whether it's Deng, Dudley, or whomever, that's another person who's going to be, you know, needing the ball on a frequent basis. Goran Dragic, again, not necessarily ball dominant, but he does like to score, and he's effective at it. He's certainly, at this point in his career, probably more effective at it than Dwayne Wade is. So that kind of leaves Wade as the odd man out there. And so while he might have, like during the Big Three era, a much more effective overall field goal percentage, more effective season, I think you'll see his production kind of taper off a little bit as he nears this end of his career.
I have so many feelings.
All of them bad.
All of them are bad feelings. Well, that's kind of the elephant in the room, right? Is that we know at some point there's going to be like a major drop off. I feel like with guys like NBA guys, it's so often isn't just like guys like Wade, right? Just like all stars, you know, guys like Chris Anderson, they just kind of every few years, they take fewer and fewer minutes. Their production slowly declines along with their minutes and so on and so forth. But like all stars, like you think about like Kobe and Nash, Dwight Howard, even like, it's almost like you're walking in the ocean and all of a sudden it's like that 4 foot drop, right?
Yeah.
And that's what it is for these guys. And it's just like we know it's going to happen. You know, we know that it's out there, but we just don't know when. It's like that new movie with The Rock in it, San Andreas. Have you seen the promos for that?
No, I haven't.
It's based on the idea that there's this major earthquake coming in California and it can happen at any minute. And it's just like, it's just proven. So that it's going to happen. We just don't know when. We know that it's going to happen based on history with Wade. We just don't know when, right? So,
remind me where you live again?
In California.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
So, yeah, so it can happen. And even in the middle of this podcast, it can happen. but I will finish it because I show grit. So, yeah, I think it's unfortunate, but it's certainly possible, and it's going to happen, and we just don't know when, right?
So do you think Wade's actually more likely to drop off than Anderson is, but you just don't want to actually verbalize it and put it out there?
No, I think Wade's got – I've thought about this a lot. I think Wade's got another year. I do. I think he's probably – I kind of looked at that. When he signed that contract, I was like, okay, by the end of this his contract – I think he thinks he's probably got two more years so that he can play out this contract, right?
Yeah.
And then have the leverage.
Yeah.
You know, I would say two more years at the time he signed the two-year deal. He's like, okay, I got 2 years. It'll go to 2016. The Heat will be a little bit more lenient with me. They'll let me maybe make a little bit more money because teams haven't figured out this whole new cap situation yet and what's really what's true value with such a vastly larger cap, you know? If he can at least play two more solid years of, like, you know, at the end of his prime, Dwayne Wade, then at least he'll have the leverage to make, like, to, you know, get a decent contract and finish up his year, his career, I mean. So I think we're a couple years away from the 4 foot drop in the ocean or the San Andreas earthquake or whatever.
Let's hope so.
Yeah, definitely. All right. Final superlative. Most likely to be replaced in the draft.
I think it's actually Chris Anderson. And I keep fluctuating with this, and I probably shouldn't. But to me, you know, based on what you just mentioned as far as his likely degradation next season, you've got to make a move now. Again, I know that Miami's probably not going to draft a front court player, and if everybody tells me that I'm wrong, chances are I'm probably wrong. But at the same time, I think you should look into that option, because you're going to have a guy like Anderson, as much as he might mean the franchise and the fan base, etc. Okay, it's either going to be Anderson or Udonis Haslam. You could say at this point that maybe they're very similar players, both gritty, both kind of playing through injury and through whatever limited ability they ever had in the first place. They're not going to be incredibly effective. They're good to fill in spots, but they're no longer going to be functional role players on a consistent basis. So if you can draft a player to replace either one of them, that's what you do. You can still plug in enough tweeners, guys like either Tyler Johnson or James Ennis or somebody else that you can find via free agency, and plug them in there where you don't necessarily need to replace a wing player. But to me, if you can replace a front court player like Anderson or Haslam with somebody young who has a stronger skill set at this point in their career and has a bigger, better chance of developing into another, I don't know, I can't think of a single comparison at this point, but they can continue to develop, you have to make that move, and that's why I feel strongly about that.
So do you think it's worth using the hypothetical 10th pick on a backup front guy, right?
Absolutely.
I wonder if they're better off if they keep McRoberts, right, and they have this trio of Whiteside, Bosch, and McRoberts, and then, you know, that's your basic three-man power rotation, so that when Whiteside comes off, Bosch slides over to center, which he's capable of doing, and McRoberts moves in next to Bosch. I wonder if you're better off going into free agency to replace Anderson and Haslam with a guy that's a little bit younger and has a few more miles to give, and it might be more worth it to find that guy in free agency than it is to spend the 10th overall pick on that guy.
It's possible. And but I still, you know, again, like I mentioned before, I don't mean to cut you off, but to me, the possibility of Whiteside leaving the franchise is also something you have to consider. You don't want to be, you know, you don't want to all of a sudden have this glaring weakness in 2 years where you all of a sudden don't have a competent front court player anymore because Chris Bosch is older, he's stuck at the power forward position where he really belongs, Anderson's going to retire, Haslam's going to retire, and you can't re-sign Whiteside. Although, as optimistic as we'd like to be about the fact that Miami can re-sign him, maybe he goes elsewhere because of his ego, because he doesn't like the offensive scheme, who knows, whatever could happen. With a guy that's been as volatile as him, you never know. So to me, if you can draft somebody that has a higher upside so that you can start grooming him next year, and hopefully maybe you don't even ever have to have him fill in that gap because Whiteside resigns and then he's just a competent backup who eventually leaves via, you know, restricted free agency or something like that. But that's a whole thing for another matter. For now, you want somebody who's competent, who has a better skill set, who has, you know, youth on their side and has room for growth.
You're going to love who I pick. You're going to love this.
Okay.
Josh McRoberts.
Nice.
After all of me fighting you on the front court stuff, I'm just going to go with the other front court guy. You said Chris Anderson, I'm going with McRoberts. You know, I think when I looked at this question, if they do draft a wing player, that player is probably going to be on the bench. Yeah. So I was thinking about going with Luol Deng, right, because he might opt out, he might leave. The Heat could certainly use a perimeter guy in general with or without Deng on the roster. But if Deng is on the roster and they draft a wing guy, if they draft a small forward, a Kelly Oubre or Stanley Johnson or something like that, he's not taking Deng's job. He's probably going to back him up for the year.
Oh, yeah.
So he's not replacing Deng in that sense. If anything, he's replacing Michael Beasley, and I just don't know if that's worth talking about. But so I look at it that way, and I think, well, if they do replace anybody, then it's probably McRoberts, because they could draft a guy, and they can either play him over McRoberts, or, you know, or if McRoberts is still injured or gets injured again, or they could just at that point, more likely in this scenario, if they do draft a guy with McRoberts', you know, at least shooting skill set and just technical gifts, just trading McRoberts. So I think I would probably go with him. I think that if the Heat could find, I talked about them being intrigued with McRoberts, but if they could find a guy of comparable skill set who they think is has a little bit more upside, then I think Josh McRoberts becomes tradable because at least they have a comparable skill set, and that's what they're intrigued by, right? They're intrigued by that skill set and what those skills can mean in the realm of the offense that they're going to be running next year. So I go with that, and because if they I still think they draft a perimeter guy, but at that point he's not replacing Dang, not next year at least.
Do you think you can find somebody in the draft though that duplicates McRoberts' varied skill set?
If you can find enough of it, I don't think you can find a guy who we know can pass like McRoberts, but I think you could find probably a more capable defender and somebody in and a more capable shooter. Because McRoberts is a good shooter, but he's not a great shooter. He doesn't have a lot of range. He's really a mid-range guy. He's not a great three-point shooter. So at least if you can find a guy who's mobile and athletic, I think that's what they're going to be looking for. And it's somebody that can kind of who could play power forward, maybe a little bit of center, just like a big man, just a guy that can come off the bench and who can help Bosch slide over to center, which is how I visualize this team next season. I think that's what they do.
But have anybody in mind?
I haven't given – I want to do like a larger draft podcast in the future where like maybe you and I really delve into these prospects, but Kaminsky is the obvious name. I'm not a fan of him in the NBA. I've seen way too many guys like Kaminsky flame out in the NBA. The kid from Texas is intriguing, but I really haven't dug him up too much. I don't know. I have to look more into it, but if that guy's around, I think that that's certainly a possibility. Everybody's kind of looking at the net, like, you know, you talk to Heat fans or you look at you see what they're tweeting about, and everybody says, can we find the next Kawhi Leonard? I think that might be the wrong way to look. It is the wrong way to look at it because Kawhi is like, you know, that guy doesn't come around every draft, right? So he's not there for them to dig up. There might not be an ex Kawhi. But, you know, maybe a guy like Draymond Green, you know, somebody that could just kind of do everything pretty well and can play the power forward position and play a few minutes at center, that might be the guy that's more jive with what Miami needs.
It's funny because, you know, Kawhi, you look at his physical gifts and that's what really makes him stand out more than anything else, but you could make that argument for a guy like Draymond who can cover multiple positions and is often playing undersized at the power forward spot. I mean, he probably is more effective for what he does than Kawhi is if you really look at it from that perspective. At least he has been this season, so...
What do you mean, like a pound for pound? He's been given, like what's God's given him, and what he's able to do on the court?
Yeah, exactly. Like it's harder to predict somebody being able to take that next step. And if you look for a player like Draymond Green, because of his size, because of his speed, because of how he plays multiple positions or can play effectively at guard, you know, effectively multiple positions. Whereas a guy like Kawhi is a pretty just lengthy, long-limbed kind of the defensive-minded player who has some potential on offense kind of thing. I mean, I think you find guys like that much more frequently than you say find a guy who's probably 6'6 at best and plays like he's 6'10, but can guard guys that are 6'2. I mean, who do you find that's like that?
That's a good point. But if you can at least find a guy that can kind of do the things where, you know, that they don't have a weakness necessarily, where they can kind of do a little bit of everything, you know, because everybody... I think what's glaring about Miami's roster right now is everybody has a very obvious weakness. Like, we know what Michael Beasley can and can't do. We know that James Ennis can't dribble. We know that, you know, like, Henry Walker's basically just going to chuck up a shot if he gets it beyond the three-point line. We know what these guys can and cannot do. But then you look at, you know, there's certain players in the NBA, and I think the Milwaukee Bucks are a good example of this, where they just have a lot of guys that can kind of do a little bit of everything. You know, they don't have a Draymond Green by any extent, but, you know, they kind of just have guys that can do stuff. And I don't know. I feel like if the Heat can find somebody that can fill in and just make sure that there's not a major negative on the floor, that would be a huge positive, not only because that player is just a huge positive, but just the difference between the huge negative of like a Beasley or an Ennis on the court at times, the difference between that and just a guy that's not going to be a glaring hole on defense or something like that is going to, that's a huge leap. From really bad to average is a huge leap. So,
you know, now that we're talking about Draymond Green, you've seen him a lot and you seem to have some respect for his game. Would you ever consider a trade with maybe Chris Bosh? If you're going to offer Draymond Green like a max contract, no.
No, you don't trade Bosh for Green. Green's a good guy to have to fill out a roster, and he's a max-level player. I don't think that's a debate. But he's a max-level player for a team that has Klay Thompson and Steph Curry already.
Right, okay.
And I think like Bosh is our Curry. He's our Klay Thompson. He's the guy that's going to score the 20 points a game, and you can almost count on it. You know, he's the guy that you can base an offense around. You can't do that with Green, but he makes the whole thing function better.
Okay.
You know, so I think, yeah, so it's a good question, but if the Heat had the room to offer Green a max deal, I say go give him the offer sheet, right? But not if that means giving up Bosh or even Whiteside or Dragic.
And I just want to qualify that my asking that doesn't necessarily mean that I would entertain any offers for Chris Bosh. He's my favorite. He's not going anywhere.
That's right. He's never going anywhere. Not Chris.
Yeah, I don't want to get any email or anything like that.
Not Bashi Bear. All right. It was a good podcast. Glad to be back. Good job, David.
Thanks so much. I really appreciate the encouraging signs there. So
positive reinforcement.
We can talk about more next time.
Yeah, let's get a little bit deeper into the draft maybe next time, but we'll figure it out. Thanks for listening to the Heat Check. You can find us on iTunes. Rate us, review us, say nice things about us. In doing that, you help other people find the podcast because the ratings bump us up on iTunes or something like that. So please do it. You can find the podcast on SoundCloud as well as iTunes. So thanks for listening. Thanks for subscribing. Talk to you next time.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.